Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
Gators Breakdown, episode 137 is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Joining me this episode is Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his website, readandreaction.com. Will, we're not going to bury the lead much more. He's back.
He's back. We need to get him a hat, Dave.
We got to get him a hat.
What's up, freaks?
That is Bill Sykes. That is Bill Sykes, people.
Yeah, I am back. It is true. I was being called a liar. People saying I wasn't going to be back on. They didn't believe me. Well, here I am. I'm back on the show.
Well,
and yes, I did get a haircut for the summer. So
I think people were thinking I had you in shackles and put you on a desolated island, and you were, you know, not being fed, didn't have beer.
Well, if that's what you want to call Florida and all the bass fishing I've been doing, but you know, but yeah, I am in the Sunshine State, and I'm glad to be home and having a great time. It's just been kind of a busy spring with vacation and, you know, just kind of everything going on.
And he's got the tan going, so this is evidence that I didn't bury him behind the drywall when we were doing the base. But a couple of people accused me of that. So
you're gonna have to get me back up there to Philly before you can do that. That's gonna be a tall order.
Well, this time of year, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Will, I just think what we're gonna do is you and I are gonna be quiet for the next 45 minutes and just let Bill go.
Hey, that's what the people want. I mean, you know, we're chopped liver. The minute you announced he was back, it was like, you know, Twitter was on fire. So we're glad to have him back, and we'll let him give the people what they want.
Yeah, all right. I got, let's see, how many spreadsheets do I have lined up tonight? Line one.
Because even people on the 24/7 sports, Swamp 24/7 now, if you guys didn't know, but even they were wondering where Bill was. So Bill hasn't only been absent from the podcast. He's been absent from a lot of other things as well. Just, but nothing bad. Just life gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah, I've been on special assignment with the government. The Russians were tampering with the star rating system and had to kind of infiltrate that. Had to get them out. Yeah. No, I've just been taking a break, man. Just enjoying being back in Florida. That's the honest truth.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Remember, you can find Are You Gators Breakdown episodes on newsforjax.com/GatorsBreakdown. On there as well, you can find links to iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, whichever way you prefer. Also, follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and on Facebook at Gators Breakdown. And hey, when you're on iTunes, please rate and review the show. Let Gator Nation know what they're getting with Gators Breakdown. And Bill, just kind of quickly, we know spring practice has started, and kind of, of course, the hot topic for the last, 2.5 weeks now when it started. You know, general, and, you know, of course, we'll dive into, of course, quarterback and some other positions. But your general feel of Dan Mullen's first 2.5 weeks on the field?
To be expected. Exactly what I expected. It's going to be a little bit of a rough transition. You're getting a complete overhaul of every system in the program is being overhauled. The personnel is being reviewed. They're going to be toying with things. Going from a pro style, if that's what you want to call it, offense to Dan Mullen's iteration of the spread, as he likes to say. He calls it a spread.
Can we call it? Can we call the previous no style?
We can call it offensive. But yeah, and then you're going from, you know, a lot of nickel and 4-3 to sort of a 3-4. I know we've talked about the one gap and how there might be some, and there's been some word that they may sit in the nickel a lot because of the personnel at linebacker and things like that. But everything's changing, so it's going to be upheaval. Yes, I would have loved to have seen all the quarterbacks firing on all cylinders in the scrimmage. But, guys, first scrimmage, first year, I expected some chaos, and I think that there is a little bit of a sour taste because, you know, Franks and some of the others struggled at QB, but this is going to take a little time, and we're going to have to be a little patient. We got to keep seeing the good processes go in place. We need to see some progress in the recruiting front, and the rest is going to take care of itself because we continue to see positive things out of what Mullen is doing. He's engaging the fans and great returns in strength and conditioning. We see some player development going on. I'm encouraged. I'm not, you know, I'm certainly not sounding any alarms a week into practice.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too. It's not to overreact to the scrimmage. Of course, that was the big bullets flying and offense versus defense and ones on ones and twos on ones and twos versus twos, all that good stuff. So I don't think we'll take too much from that, but you know, it's halfway through spring practice. And I think, you know, many of the same questions fans had going in are still there. Basically for a lot of reasons you pointed out, there's a lot of tinkering going on. And they're just trying to figure out who can fit where and still trying to figure out that quarterback position. And, you know, we'll start from there. Been talked ad nauseum. Robbie Andrew had his stats. Frank 7-22 for 127 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Kyle Trask, 12-18 for 182 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. So I've been higher on Franks than I have Kyle Trask, and mostly due to just not seeing enough of Trask and him not having the experience. A good majority of the time, a two-star quarterback isn't going to beat a highly touted four-star quarterback that Franks was. But there was a reason we were all excited for Emory Jones coming here. You know, it's a highly ranked, highly touted four-star quarterback made for Dan Mullen's system. I just needed to see more out of Kyle Trask since there was nothing out there in live college game situations. Now, I'm not really surprised too much at how Trask looked. I'm still just more surprised that Felipe Franks didn't show the same potential in the scrimmage when it's as close to a game situation in the new offense that they're going to, and you know, it's as close as they're going to be in that to another scrimmage and then a spring game coming up. So I don't want to take too much out of one performance, but it's hard not to correlate Frank's performance too much of what we saw last season. So, you know, we'll see what happens moving forward. Can Franks continue to be the most consistent in the coming practices and then put it all together when the bullets are flying, or will the battle continue to be neck and neck and then Kyle Trask separates himself again in those live type of situations? Because there will be a time when those live situations will be a determining factor in who gets named the starter and not just the practice performances.
Yeah, and you're going to kind of hear me qualify as we go. And right off the bat, like a couple of people were like, hey, you guys are polling on who's going to win the starting job after this one scrimmage, and that's a little bit premature. No, it's a lot premature, and I know that, but we're all, you know, geeks for Florida football, and I think just about everybody that listens to the podcast is tuned in because they want to know what's going on, and they want to talk about it, and we want to take it every step of the way and say, you know, which way are things turning now and what's changing. And we're going to kind of get into some of the poll results and pepper those in. But, yeah, this is one scrimmage. Franks certainly didn't have a good showing. Trask maybe asserted himself the best amongst the quarterbacks. The one thing I think people need to realize here is that as Mullen is conducting, especially the early scrimmages, this is not about saying, let's see whether the first or second team wins, or let's see if this guy can lead us to victory. I think it's a lot more fundamental at this point because this is, yes, there are times when they can see them go through snaps and drills and throwing the ball and firing off the ball. But when, as far as with helmets on and pads on, a formal practice, this is the first time they find out, can Franks read the smash concept we want to throw? You know, can Sean Davis come up and fill where we want him to on a certain read? Can Antonius Clayton set the edge, or can he rush the passer? It's little things. And so the play calls on both sides of the ball, it's not going to be just, hey, let's see if they can score a touchdown here. It's, hey, let's run this because it's going to put this player in this position against this look, and let's get this on tape. And so you still got evaluations going on. They're finding out what they've got as a team and see if they can piece another of those advantages on the individual level and on the unit level together in their plan to win in the fall. So you've got to take what happens in these scrimmages with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, that the scrimmage was open. You know, that people could come in, accumulate stats, that they could put those things out there on Twitter. That's not something I necessarily remember coming from the McElwain regime. And so I do think it's a sign that Mullen is willing to put his guys out there and say, you know what, you're going to have to deal with the criticism in the fall, so we're going to let you deal with it all spring long and then all fall practice long. And certainly that's something that comes out of this. I certainly agree with you, Bill, that I don't think we want to overreact too much to one scrimmage. But at the same time, when the same things that you saw from the previous year crop up, then that's something that you need to be a little bit concerned about. And, you know, 7-22 is really just a bad sign. And, you know, it's a data point. It's one data point. but it's a continuation of some data points we've already gotten. And certainly I think that's why the Florida fan base is getting a little bit riled up about Frank's performance. But you know, we'll see what happens in the spring game. Certainly there'll probably be a few more practices that are open. Everyone who's watched the practices has said that Franks has really been the best player back there. And I'm assuming was sort of surprised at the performance that he put on during the scrimmage. But, you know, that's also kind of what we heard last year, is that Franks was playing really, really well in practice. And then when the lights came on, he struggled a little bit. So, you know, and the other thing is that a lot of the guys who are early enrollees, somebody like Emory Jones, you can't expect him to have a full grasp of the playbook at this point. Again, they're putting him in situations they want to see him at, but by the time the fall comes around, he should be much more versed in the playbook and maybe be more of a factor if in fact he's going to have the ability to be a starter next year.
I just want to – Will kind of went right into my question there, and it actually goes to the end of there. Is time running out for Felipe Franks? And one reason I ask that is, say Emory Jones gets better practice by practice by practice, has a pretty good spring game. You know, you're going into fall. Say Franks just doesn't really progress much more than what we see. Like, we hear he's still practicing good, but spring game rolls around and it's still kind of just more of the same. Say, you know, Kyle Trask is the number one guy. Emory Jones is making improvements. You expect him to get better by game one when that rolls around. Is time running out for Felipe Franks?
Yes. Yes and no. First of all, I agree with what Will said, and I didn't want to say for one second like I'm trying to excuse a poor performance, and it is very concerning that Frank struggled to the extent that he did. But is it running out on him? Yes, it's running out on you from the day you show up on campus. But how quickly time is running out on him, and I understand your meaning is, hey, is he about to lose ground to Emory Jones and maybe Trask? Yes, maybe, but that is completely relative to how fast they can ascend, because it depends on them to make up that ground, because there's a very real scenario here where Trask just had better play calls, a more favorable personnel group. Maybe he wasn't facing the same pressure packages. I'm just saying it's plausible that he is not separating himself from Franks yet. And if he is not, you could see a scenario where if Jones can, let's say he struggles to pick things up and is a slower developer, or maybe Mullen just feels like the guy needs a redshirt year, that maybe Franks is your starting quarterback at this point, you know? And so, yes, there's a very real possibility that time could quickly slip away from Franks, but I think it's just too early to say how fast that's going to happen. Now, if you start to see Jones thrive in first team reps, if he starts asserting himself with his legs and kind of starts to hone in on his accuracy a little bit, then Franks could have a real problem on his hands. But I don't think it's time to proclaim it yet.
Again, I think it's one practice that we happen to see, right? And so if he's performing better than everybody else in all the other practices, then I don't think time's running out on him at all. He also doesn't have the history of last year with Mullen. Obviously, Mullen can go look at the tape, but he doesn't have that history last year. So it's not as if McElwain's coming back for a fourth year and Franks was a quarterback last year and struggled. Oh, he's still struggling with the same stuff. We got to try something else. It's a completely new system. You would expect him to have some bumps in the road as he adapts to that system. They're the only ones who know what he does when no one else is seeing it. And so, you know, if he's underperforming, then obviously the time's running out. But the fact that they've still got him running with the ones, the fact that he's still starting, I think is indicative of the fact that, you know, no one has at least separated themselves and climbed above him. And so at that point, I'm not ready to say time's running out. I know it's running out with the fan base, which is the thing they're going to have to be careful of, is that Twitter was going nuts last weekend of people who immediately jumped on Trask as the starter for next year. And probably many of the same people who had tweeted at us the week before when we talked about whether Trask had a chance of being a starter and said, no way. So, you know, I think for the fan base, that's what you got to watch out for, is that, you know, the Florida fan base is demanding, and that's a good thing when things are going well. And it could be a hard thing when things are going poorly. And, you know, it, like I said, it was interesting that Mullen had the scrimmage open, and then you're going to have another data point for the spring game. And if Frank struggles in both of those, the fan base is going to be the thing that's going to be interesting to watch.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, and Will brought this up last weekend, and going into, you know, my worry last year with the Felipe Franks and Malik Zaire thing was, I've been tired of seeing time after time again, year after year, a quarterback competition, and it goes up until game one, and you know they're splitting reps up until that first game. You know, hopefully What turns out either way, whether it's Franks, whether it's Trask, Emory Jones is going to have a package. And there's going to be times where he's in a game with the first teams, I think, with the first teamers, whether it be to be in that Tebow role where he's converting third and short or fourth and short, or you know, he's pass enough, he's accurate enough to where they want to throw him in that fake Tebow run and take a step back and throw a ball 30, 40 yards down the field. He's going to have his chances to do that. So that's also going to be practicing those type of plays. Hopefully, we won't get a starter by the end of spring, I don't think. And plus, I trust Dan Mullen to make the decision here. But it would be nice when fall rolls around and after a week or so that, hey, we're rolling with Felipe Franks, or, hey, we're rolling with Kyle Trask. These are going to be the guys, and they're going to take number one reps for the next, you know, 3-4 weeks by the time we play Charleston Southern.
You know, I don't know, man. You said something there that, and we were kind of talking about this before the show, that I honestly don't know if I agree with it or not. Will Emory Jones have that package to add that element to the offense? And we would assume yes, because you look at the roster and he's probably the only guy that can add that from the quarterback position. Excuse me. I'm sorry, Will. I think I just offended you. I forgot about Kadarius Dolan. But I
think he's going to have packages too.
Right. But here's my point here. There were three quarterbacks that Dan Mullen recruited to Mississippi State who went on to become full-time starters. That was Tyler Russell, Dak Prescott, and Nick Fitzgerald. All three of them redshirted. And while Nick Fitzgerald certainly wasn't going to unseat Dak Prescott, and Dak Prescott kind of came on slowly, and they had Tyler Russell, who was pretty good for them, and so they didn't necessarily need him. This first-year situation that we're looking at here for Dan Mullen in Florida is very similar statistically on offense to what he inherited at Mississippi State, because he took Tyler Russell, who I believe was a four-star recruit in his first recruiting class. Not quite as high as Emory Jones, but relative to Mississippi State, he was a prized quarterback recruit. You know, and their quarterback the first year was Tyson Lee. In 2008, the year before Mullen arrived, he threw for 1,519 yards, 7 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions for a 113 quarterback rating. Well, in 2017, Florida's quarterback, Felipe Franks, had exactly the same quarterback rating, 113.3, or at least within a point, 9 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, only 1,438 yards. So they're within 100 yards of each other, both mid to high 50s completion ratios or percentages, very similar to what he's inherited. And even though he had Tyler Russell come in, he redshirted it. And so it makes me think there is a plausible scenario, again, where he says, hey, wait a minute, I'm thinking about the long term here, and maybe we don't see Emory Jones if he doesn't feel like he's ready to go, or it will hurt the long-term plan.
Well, and you're not going to have packages for 9 different guys back there in the Wildcat. So if you've got a package for Tony back there, then I don't know that you necessarily
– won't have a package either?
Well, as long as they're on the get-to list, we'll be all right, right? So if you've got a package for Tony, I don't know that you need a package for Emory Jones. And then in that case, why not save the year for him if you don't think he's going to be an integral part of what you're going to do? And also, you know, the Tebow role was critical to winning a national championship. So they burned a year of his eligibility in order to win a national championship. That's worth it. Mm-hmm. Is it worth burning a year of eligibility to go 9-3 instead of 8-4? I don't know. And if you make that calculus, if you're Mullen and just say, hey, we're going to roll with what we've got, we think it's good enough, we think we have enough playmakers. A lot of it depends on what happens out at wide receiver with Van Jefferson and Trayvon Grimes. You know, if they can both play, then you have the ability to bring Tony inside. So I think there are a lot of questions that need to be answered before you really talk about whether there are specific packages for specific players. Emory Jones looked really good on tape running the ball, but it wasn't like it was a running offense or anything like that. It wasn't something where I looked at it and said, wow, like that guy could be a running back. He's a very good running back or a very good running quarterback with a strong arm and does a lot of other things well as well.
Well, I know Seth Silvani, one of our Twitter followers, responded to my poll, and he says he doesn't think Jones will play as a true freshman. I know Dylan Brooks asked us if he thought that Mullen would put together that Tebow-like, you know, or Wildcat package for Jones. You know, and I will say this, even though I've listed off the reasons why I think it might not happen, it's not without precedent under Mullen. In 2013, Damian Williams played as a true freshman in six games, passed for almost 300 yards, 112 on the ground. And then this past year, Keaton Thompson, I think he took over for Dick Fitzgerald when he was hurt. But even so, he played in 10 games. So it's not like he was just, you know, inserted after the injury. And he had 388 yards passing, 446 rushing. So, you know, it's just a matter, I think, of how Mullen views that experiment that he conducted at the beginning of his Mississippi State tenure. Does he feel like that went right or did it go wrong? And I think he's going to look at that, look at his personnel now, and do what he thinks is best. It's really hard to predict.
So, Bill, you mentioned it, and I posted a poll last week, but we'll go back to it. But you posted a poll this week. We had the scrimmage results. We've had, you know, that was the and that was the reason I posed the question: would Kyle Trask start a game, basically over Felipe Franks? And the answer was 60% Franks would start, basically over Kyle Trask. But since the scrimmage from last Friday, you kind of posed the same question on Twitter today or yesterday.
Yeah, I did, and it just got knocked off my screen. Yeah, we had like 1,800 responses. Let me see if I can find this for you, buddy.
He's rusty, folks. He's rusty.
Yes. It's this is who can search the internet the fastest right now.
There it is. Sorry, there guys. Yeah, we had 1,795 votes when I said following UF's first spring scrimmage, who do you expect to eventually win the quarterback job and why? And we promised we'd discuss the answers on tonight's show, and of course we will. Overwhelmingly, well, at least I'd say overwhelmingly, 55%, which is twice as much as the next best candidate. 55% of the vote went to Kyle Trask. The next candidate was Felipe Franks with 22% of the vote. Then Emory Jones was third with 21%. So it's pretty evenly split now between Felipe and Emory for second place. And then the fourth option I gave was Allen, Tony, or other, meaning like a grad transfer. And only 2% among those being Will Miles voted for that. So, so after the scrimmage obviously changed some minds, and people were like, hey, if Franks isn't getting it now, yeah, he's not going to get it. And I understand that. I understand that. Maybe it doesn't work out that way, but I get it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you go and look at it, and it didn't surprise me. There were a lot of people on the fence anyway, and going back to Felipe Franks' performance last year, it was just some people in the mold that I was wait and see for Kyle Trask. There were still so many people from what we saw of Felipe Franks last year in wait and see mode on Felipe Franks as well, because it was so ugly, and they were still not sure that even though Dan Mullen coming in can fix Felipe Franks, and I still don't know if that's yet to be determined. That's kind of what we've talked about here at this point so far. Still yet to be determined, but you know the evidence is starting to pile up for plenty of fans out there of whether Dan Mullen can save Felipe Franks.
Yeah, well, and fixing him is a relative term. I mean, you know, are you expecting Baker Mayfield? Are you expecting Austin Appleby? Like, what does fixing mean? Because a QB rating of 113, 9 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Fixing can be 15 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and a QB rating of, you know, 129. And then you really are talking about somebody who played sort of like Luke Del Rio, or who played like Austin Appleby. And that's okay if you run for 800 yards. And so, you know, how he can participate in the running game, I think, is maybe one of the things we're really going to have to watch for, particularly in the spring game, is if Franks is running, if they've got the quarterbacks live and Franks is running and he's doing that well, that adds a dimension to the offense that wasn't there last year and opens up the field a little bit. And he doesn't necessarily need to be an elite passer for the offense to just be serviceable. And the offense, you know, if you look at Mississippi State, there was significant improvement under Mullen year one. And I think that's something that we can expect to see in year one at Florida, irrespective of who's a quarterback, just because there's that going to be that extra threat of the quarterback running.
Here's the caveat to that, though. And you're absolutely right. And I actually tweeted today that the rush offense under Mullen went from 105th in 2008, right before Mullen got there, to his first year, they went from 105th all the way to 9th. It doesn't get much bigger than that. I think it went from 11th to 1st in the SEC. you know, the scoring offense went from 115th to 72nd. The total offense went from 113 to 65th. And here's the kicker, though. The passing offense took a step back in year one. It went from 94th down to 113. And that's very similar to where Florida is at this past year. In 2017, they were 109th in total offense, 75th in rushing, 101st in passing, 108th in scoring. So the one thing I will say is that, and this is only one time that he's done this, but the passing offense took a while. Now, before anybody freaks out on that, I do want to say that it got better over the years. It went from 94th to 113, then it went to 86. Then it dipped back down to 94th, but then year five, it was 58, then 53, then 22, then 14, and then it kind of took a step back again under Fitzgerald. So he's got a good history with getting the offense in the right direction. Just understand the passing offense, depending on how things work out at quarterback, could take some time.
Well, and it's interesting that what you said there. The offense improved significantly in terms of yards per rush, in terms of actual rushing. The points per game improved 15, 20 spots. It did not improve massively. And that's, you know, that's one of the problems, is that points correlate to yardage through the air. They don't necessarily correlate very well to yardage on the ground. And so, yeah, the running game may be better this year, but is that actually going to have an impact on getting across the end zone? And, you know, big plays correlate with scoring. It's pretty clear that it's not red zone efficiency. It's not any of that stuff. Usually big plays are what gets you to score. And, you know, the running game, that's not typically where the big plays come from. So, you know, we can be encouraged that the running game may be a little bit better under Mullen. I think it's one data point, right? It's 2008, 2009. You look at that and you say, hey, that's encouraging that the offense got better, that the running game got better. Okay, the passing game took a step back, but then he improved that going forward in years 2, 3, and 4. But really the passing offense is what's going to make the offense hum and what's really important to get this system going.
Yeah, and it may take time. And look, what Mullen may just see, and I think what we see, is the stable of running backs that Florida has is pretty good. And Will, on your latest on Read and Reaction, you took a look at Florida's running backs and asking the question, can that group carry the offense? Well, you know, what we've been talking about so far, they just may have to. And I've been under the thought of, they've been kind of missing their home run threat this spring, because I think Malik Davis was kind of the only proven, home run threat, a guy who could take the ball, 60, 70, 80 yards for a score. You know, I don't think Jordan Scarlett's that type of back. LaMichael Pirine's not that type of back. Or Darius Lemons, maybe, from what we've seen from a couple of highlights he shared. He shared some from the scrimmage where he had a 90-yard run, another one where he took a dump-off pass from Kyle Trask, and it was like 35, 40 yards down the field that he took. So they may have some explosiveness with Darius Lemons. So, you know, you have a stable of backs, you know, Iverson Clement and Damian Pierce coming in as well. It looks like Lemons and Davis may be that home run threat. And then just, you know, Jordan Scarlett, the bulldozer, can get some chunk yardage, but, you know, I don't think he's the home run threat rating to happen like the other guys. And LaMichael Pirine, you know, it been so-so, pretty average, but, you know, this guy, these guys as a collective group may have to be what carries this offense.
Well, sure. I mean, the Florida offense, from a rushing perspective, at least yards per rush, was in like the 60s last year. And if you figure that the offense finished down in the hundreds, that was really sort of the only bright spot. But I do think people misremember what Scarlett, like how good Scarlett was 2 years ago. I mean, he was a very good back, but he was not an elite back. Now, the game against LSU, he was very, very, very good. But a lot of that, if you go back and look at the tape, was the offensive line was blowing LSU back. And Scarlett was taking advantage of that, you know, 8, 9, 10 yards at a time. But, you know, 2 years ago, he averaged 5 yards a rush. So 179 attempts for 889 yards, 5 yards a rush. Pirine had 136 attempts for 562. So he averaged 4.1. Malik Davis had 79 attempts for 526, and he averaged 6.7. And then Lemons had 19 carries for 136. So he averaged 7.2. But 89 of those yards came against UAB. And so, you know, the question is it because of the competition that he was playing against, or is it because of he's a really good player? And I mean, it's probably a little bit of both. But, you know, in the article, what I was talking about was basically, you know, how do we quantify how good a running back is? And really, there are two ways to do it. One is through their usage rate. So, you know, there are only a few players who get more than 300 carries in a season. So Bo Scarborough a few years ago got 395 carries, and he averaged 5.6 yards per rush. and 5.2 is about the average yards per rush the players get. So typically, if you get 300 carries, you're above that average because they're only giving the ball that many times to an above average player. The other thing is that from an efficiency standpoint, that yards per rush becomes really important as you get lower carries, because there's a penalty associated with having more and more and more opportunities, right? It's harder to break that long 90-yard run you hit contributes less to the average as you have more and more carries. So somebody like Bryce Love for Stanford averaged something like 8.1 yards per rush last year and carried it over 200 times. That's really, really impressive. You look at Scarlett, he carried it 179 times and averaged 5 yards a rush. It's average. I mean, it's more yardage than the 50th percentile, but it's below the 50th percentile in terms of his efficiency. So he's a good player. Like, I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's not a game breaker. We're not getting a top 10 running back coming in. Now, certainly you can point to the offensive line. You can point to the struggles at quarterback, and you can point to the coaching staff and say, hey, he's primed for a breakout year because all those things are going to change. And maybe that's true. I just don't know that you can count on it from a historical perspective. And like I mentioned earlier, rushing offense doesn't necessarily correlate to points. Passing offense does. And so to say, hey, we're going to run it 65% of the time, give it to these guys and they're going to carry the offense, I think is a stretch looking at the history of these guys and looking at how they've performed thus far in the field.
Yeah, listen, I think that there's a chance that Scarlett has a big year. I mean, Mullins had, I think, five different running backs rush for over 1,000 yards, and those guys averaged, when they hit 1,000, they went well over 1,000, averaged like 1,182 a year. So it's certainly not without precedent that we see him break out and maybe he becomes that guy. I'm kind of with you. I look at him as a very good ball carrier. I'd like to see him continue to develop in the passing game, both as a blocker and receiver. I don't put him up there on that Dalvin Cook level. I'm just being honest. And that's just me with my eyeballs, you know, and feel free to disagree. I think they're going to be very good at running back this year, but they really could use somebody to step up and be great.
Well, and Malik Davis, I think, does fit that profile, both with his yards per average and also with the explosion that we saw, just turning like negative plays into 2-yard runs and things like that. The concern I have with him is his health. I mean, nobody knows. It's been a very mysterious knee injury, mm-hmm. and we're not sure what his level of health is. And so to say he's a major cog in the offense, especially early on, you know, I just don't know that we can say that because we don't know what his health's going to be. I mean, he may come out and be fantastic, and that would be great. And I'll love to eat crow on this if he comes out and plays great, because I don't. There's nothing better than if I'm being negative and somebody comes out and proves me wrong, because that means Florida's winning. But you look at history of knee injuries and significant knee injuries, and usually it takes a full year for a player to get back, and they're not back to who they were from an explosion standpoint until 2 years past the injury. And if that's the case, well, then we're not going to see that same explosion this year. And I mentioned in the article, Nick Chubb was unbelievable from an efficiency and a usage standpoint at Georgia until he tore his knee ligament, and then it took him a couple of years to get back to where he was. And that may be something that we're dealing with Davis, and, you know, it's okay. It is what it is, but to count on him being the same explosive player game one, I think is really putting too much pressure on him. I mean, we just want to see him go out there and stay healthy and you know, really get some hits on the field.
And I think that's true of the entire unit right now. I mean, we actually were debating somebody that had, you know, said that every running back Florida has could be in the rotation at every school in America. And that was six deep. And I just think that's ludicrous. I mean, I just don't think they've proven that. But even so, even if they are all that good, here's what they're up against. Over two-thirds of the time in Dan Mullen's offense, the quarterback is going to be in the top two in both carries and rushing mm-hmm. yards. So they're going to have diminished opportunities. You're not going to see, I don't think, maybe, okay, if just something crazy happens, could you see two running backs with 750 yards? I don't see it. I'm looking across his stats, and
Maybe this year.
But I still kind of don't think that happens. I think you're going to see a couple of guys in the 300 range. You know, one guy maybe gets 1,000, whether it be Scarlett or whoever. And I think the guys like Tony. I think the guys like Malik Davis if he's healthy. And although Malik Davis could rush to the forefront, let's say limits, and Tony, I think those guys get, you know, spottier touches. And so I think that they make big plays in spots, but I don't think you're going to see them just pile up yardage every week.
Yeah. The other thing I think to take into account is that, you know, in 2014, I'm not sure Mullen knew exactly what he had with Dak Prescott, and he ran him 210 times for 986 yards. In 2015, he knew exactly what he had with Dak Prescott, and he ran him 160 times. So he ran him 50 times less from 2014 to 2015 because he was trying to protect his quarterback because he knew he needed him on the field chucking the ball around. There's nobody that he's going to put in to start that I imagine he's going to feel like he needs to protect. And so, you know, down in the red zone when you need a yard or two and you need to, and you've got numbers, the quarterback's going to run the ball. And, you know, those sorts of opportunities are going to go to him. I think you're right, Bill. I think the quarterback opportunities to run the ball are going to take some of the yardage and some of the opportunities away from the running backs. And, you know, again, it's a good set of backs. It's nothing that, you know, nobody should sit here and say, I am definitely not saying that they're below average. I'm just saying to expect them to carry the offense is asking quite a bit.
And the group that's going to have to help those guys, quarterback and running backs, is the offensive line. And guys, I had some quotes that kind of rubbed me the wrong way coming from a couple of the offensive linemen. And, you know, this come from Tyler Jordan. This is talking about the scrimmage last week. Quote, first half was very slow. Our demeanor was very lethargic. Coach Mullen talked to us after, said, this is the swamp. We don't play at that standard. And then added from Fred Johnson, his message was just like, get up and go, basically. No being timid. You mess up at 100% speed, effort, all of that. Now, I know these guys are still learning and swimming a little bit, but at least make sure the effort's there. And after last year, especially the Michigan game, you know, everything that happened around that with kind of McElwain calling them out, and look, fans in general have kind of called out this offensive line of being of not living up to standards, not being tough, not playing with a mean streak. To come out, you know, in a scrimmage type situation and kind of being lethargic, as Tyler Jordan said, you know, it's kind of inexcusable to me. You have to come out firing the ball, and we've heard this, you know, from Dan Mullen of doing the relentless effort thing, and you know. See, the first half of the scrimmage, these guys didn't line up and come off the ball and play with that mean streak. So I didn't think that the effort part would necessarily be a problem. Yes, these guys are playing from behind a little bit. I think the defense is well ahead. I think the install is still being put in on the offense, and that's hurting the offensive line more than anything. But at least, like Fred Johnson said, Dan Mullen said, at least go 100% speed, effort, all of that, all the time.
Okay, I'm going to be a little ugly here. I'm not sure I buy it. Okay, because if you got an offensive lineman getting beat and say, hey, man, come on, you need to pick it up. I feel like you're not really with it and you need to fire off the ball and hit the guy in front of you and drop him off the ball. You can't say, stop letting him manhandle you. I think these guys might be getting beat by the defensive lineman with regularity. I think the defensive line is deep, and I think they've got some real players on it. I kind of felt like it was coach speak. I think they're getting beat. They're just getting beat. And I think they're going to be looking for some personnel answers there. You're probably going to see some pieces. We've heard Nick Buchanan might be making a little bit of a move at center. We'll see if he's able to do that. We know they were hoping to get something out of Chris Blake and Noah Banks. We'll see if maybe they can unseat some of these guys that are entrenched in there. Offensive line needs help. And they're either going to have to step up and assert themselves, they're going to have to get stronger and better, or they're going to have to get the guys in there that can do it. And I don't say that to be disrespectful of the players that are in there. And I believe that they're giving their all to the university, but that position needs to be better.
I think lethargic maybe is I don't know if that's the right word. I think timid is what I would have said last year, especially against Michigan, that they got sort of popped in the mouth and didn't know how to respond. And you know, it's you don't go 100% when you're not sure about your assignments, when you're not sure that the guy next to you is going to be there to help you out, to where you know you might, to where you know you're going to hear about it if you screw up, those sorts of things. So maybe that's it. If we give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe it's that they came out a little bit timid. I mean, certainly I think that is a description we could use to describe McElwain in some of his press conferences last year. If we wanted to be generous, maybe lethargic would be good for those too. But, you know, to Bill's point, I mean, Juwan Taylor was 941st in terms of his national rank. Fred Johnson, 1360. TJ McCoy, 1616. Brett Heggie, who wasn't out there, is 547. But, you know, and then you look at Martez Ivey, who's second, but certainly hasn't played up to being second nationally thus far. You know, that if you put guys in the 1,000 range on the offensive line, that's the kind of performance you're going to get. You know, and to your point, Bill, if the guy across from you has more talent, then you're going to get beat. And that's a place where talent really, really shines through, is on the offensive and defensive lines. And you know, it's not as if we haven't seen the offensive line get manhandled before. So, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to us that that's a work in progress. The hope is that if they can make things simpler, then when you get blown off the ball, it's a 1 yard loss rather than a 6 yard loss on a stretch play. And then you live to fight another day. And that may be what next year has to be, is that there are just going to be some plays and some teams where you're going to struggle, but certainly hopefully some of the other guys step in and step up. And, you know, you got Garage coming in, and you got the Blake and Banks and those sorts of guys. And eventually those guys are going to start to understand what's going on with the offense and hopefully be able to push these guys. But, you know, we saw it last year, so I don't know that it should be a surprise this year. It is a good sign that the defensive line is starting to shine a little bit. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's less the offensive line, or at least not all on the offensive line. And some of it is the really, really good players on the defensive line. I mean, you know, Bill's guy, Antonius Clayton, very, very high ranked. If he starts to show through at that potential, then he's going to, you know, he has the potential to be a very good player. Elijah Conliff, to Darryl Slayton, all those guys, very highly ranked. And if they're playing up to their potential, really should be able to blow those offensive linemen off the ball.
Well, it's like Will knew where I was going next. you know, talking about this defensive line and in relation to this offensive line, is the defensive line looking good because they are getting better and certain players are starting to show up, or are they taking advantage of an offensive line that's not all there right now? You know, Brett Heggie needs to come back as well in the fall. That's a key player. They'll get back along that offensive line rotation. But, you know, it does seem like Antonius Clayton in particular, Bill, and you can definitely speak more to him than we can, but it does look like, you know, an unsung player who we've been waiting on, it's finally starting to emerge, and hopefully it can take part in spring as well, or take part in fall as well.
Yeah, you know, Clayton's a guy that I've kind of been waiting on him to break out, and I believe that he's going to. You know, in early in spring, everything we heard that he was on the third team, he was falling behind Zach Carter, falling behind just a host of people, and just very quiet, and, you know, everybody that was covering it just really wasn't seeing him make plays. And then the night before the scrimmage, it was brought to my attention that according to the Gator staff, recorded stats of what was happening in their documented plays in practice, there were 22 sacks, I think it was, or 21 sacks recorded by the team. And that was like through the first week and a half of practice. And Clayton had 8 of them. And I was like, what in the world? He's got eight of the 22 sacks. And so I had mentioned it on the Gator Bait board, which is now Swamp 247, that this was happening. And I saw where Conliff, who I think had also been struggling at the nose behind Kerry Clark, that he had the most tackles for loss with 4 on the team. And then sure enough, what they come out the day of the scrimmage and dominate. And Clayton had about 5 sacks. I think it was like 2.5 or 3 official, but he actually got quarterback more than that. He moved up from the third to the second team. And so if you guys remember about a week ago, I had tweeted right before the scrimmage that I felt like Mullen might be using the depth chart to motivate. Very reminiscent of what Urban Meyer used to do through his press conferences in the depth chart, because you got Elijah Conliff on the second team. You got Darryl Slayton on the second team. You got Antonius Clayton was on the third team. Now he's on the second. And no disrespect to the guys in front of him, but I feel like that's your war horses right there. That's the guys that are the blue chip talents, that the guys that really have a lot of potential to be all SEC players. And then sure enough, they come out and dominate in the scrimmage. Now, to answer your question, is that due to struggling offensive line? Some of it, I'm sure it absolutely is. But anytime you have success on the field, some of it is because you're just having success on the field. So the question is, can they translate that to SEC play? And I kind of think they can with those 3.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see. You know, Clayton's kind of that more hand in the dirt defensive end right now. And also, you look at CeCe Jefferson and Ja'Kai Polite are guys who are probably going to be standing up on the edges. And we haven't heard too much about those guys. You know, they're kind of solid right now. But they play that more rush in to kind of stand up. And but, you know, they've been in the backfield as well. But, you know, it's guys, it's been a while. And I can you probably have to go back to what Dante Fowler, since Florida's had a defensive line, a defensive end, where the opposing offense had to know where that guy was, where he was lining up, had to worry about him every, you know, every snap of the ball, of whether he was just going to bull rush into the backfield and come and become a problem play after play. Florida hasn't had that defensive end pretty much since then. So, yes, can CC Jefferson Ja'Kai Polite be that type? Zuniga, can he show up in bigger games? Can Antonius Clayton bring it to the fall? And Jeremiah Moon as well, kind of before spring started, kind of picked him out to be, you know, one of the more athletic guys on the field. Can and it does seem these names that we're bringing up are really kind of, you know, having their way with this offense and this offensive line right now.
Well, and you could add more names to that. Yeah, you're right. We've heard good things. I think Moon had a couple sacks in the scrimmage. I think Marlon Dunlap has done pretty well, the transfer from University of North Carolina that hasn't seen the field yet in an official capacity. But certainly Polite and Zuniga, and I mean, I just think they're looking very good up front. Did get some player weights on the defensive line. I know Conliff is playing at 320 right now. Clayton's at 261. And then Slayton is at 340, I believe. So they can be very big, very physical, and very disruptive front, which is exactly what they need if they're going to implement this defensive system right now.
Well, and the important thing is that you're naming names. So we're starting to get, we're starting to see some depth. And really, when you looked last year, a lot of the issues came down to depth at linebacker, depth on the defensive line. And eventually those things broke down. And when they did, then the defense couldn't hold up. And certainly there was other stuff going on with the coaching and all sorts of stuff, and the coaches being let go and that sort of stuff. But at the same time, it was very clear that the depth on the defensive line, the depth at linebacker was relatively lacking. Once there were a couple injuries, it was just like a dam broke. And so the more and more these young guys can step up and play meaningful snaps, then the more depth you have and the better off you're going to be if you do get an injury or a couple of injuries. And you know they're going to happen throughout the year. You hope they don't all happen at once, but depth is really the concern you got to worry about. Dave, I know you and I have talked about specifically the linebacker recruiting and the defensive line recruiting, and that just under McElwain, it wasn't really very good in terms of overall numbers, especially when you compared them to Florida State, you know, sort of going after the same guys. And you look at top 300 guys and just total numbers and all that sort of stuff. So the fact that these young guys are stepping up really gives a component of depth that is my biggest worry on the defensive side of the ball.
Bill, anything else, man?
Yeah, one other thing on the defensive side of the ball, as far as that goes, speaking of depth, I actually reached out to Amari Burney, who's been on the show before, and I wanted to check in on him, see how he was doing, and he mentioned that he was playing at 214 right now. I know some people had asked about that because it was speculated that he's a, you know, big kid for safety that you slide in a linebacker. And I told him that I was going to tell you guys that he was 260 and rotating in with CC Jefferson. But he said no, he's back at safety, and I, you know, I've heard good things about him. Heard he's flying around and hitting people and showing some pretty good ball skills back there. So I think they added a good crop of players in this last recruiting class and really in the 2016 group as well, as far as helping out that defense. And I'm hoping we start to see not only quality depth, but we see those starters take a step forward. And I think we're going to see that on the defense if we get the contributions we hope from the key players.
Yeah, and guys that must be key in, we can just quickly hit on this, Bill, because you know, we haven't talked much about these guys before we go here. I think it's imperative, guys, and I think we're seeing it, that at least one, and probably Van Jefferson over Trayvon Grimes, but one of those guys really has to be eligible this fall for this receiver core to kind of be where we want them to be, just because we haven't really seen much from Josh Hammond, Freddie Swain right now. And, you know, it's part of us, the quarterbacks as well, and we're not seeing everything, but it's pretty clear that Van Jefferson and Trayvon Grimes so far this spring have been the guys that the quarterbacks need to get the ball in their hands.
Yeah, they need those guys in the worst way. They just really do. There still needs to be more talent. And again, that's no disrespect to the roster, but you got to keep getting better. And there's certain positions where they need some depth and they need some help, you know, on the front line at certain others. And wide receivers, one where they need some more bodies. They've had some guys dinged up there. Is Cleveland back yet, or is he still hurt?
He's still, as far as the scrimmage, didn't take part in the scrimmage, and I know they got practice this week. Is not open, so they'll probably have to wait and see if they actually just let us know if those guys are practicing or not. Him and Dre Massey both haven't really taken part in spring so far.
Yeah, and so think about the swing there. You could be without right now. You could be without Massey. You could be without Cleveland. You could be without Grimes and without Jefferson, or you could have all four of those guys. And that's half of receiving corps at least for your roster. So yeah. Oh, one other thing I did hear was asking around. Apparently, the safeties are all cross-training. Somebody had asked me about that, how locked in were like the DBs to each position. And apparently there's some cross-training going on. And I heard somebody mention not only Bernie, but Donovan Steiner is one I've heard some good feedback on. And so apparently there's some good things happening in camp, some good dialogue with the coaches going on with the players, and a lot of positive mojo right now. Let's see if that continues. Let's see how that translates when we get to the fall. And
that's what spring is for.
That's right. When the helmet starts slapping and the scoreboard starts lighting up, we'll see how that holds.
Hopefully it's lighting up.
Yeah. Hopefully half of it is lighting up.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good point. Will, anything else on Reading Reaction? I know you just released your running back article and how they could carry the team. Anything you know what's coming up next?
Yeah, we got a couple more quarterback articles coming up. Case Fours. Again, this is not necessarily my personal opinion. It's my breakdown of the guy. So a couple of those coming up. Hopefully people enjoy that. And then, man, it'll be interesting after the spring game. Probably have a spring game preview up next week, what to look for. And then afterwards, obviously, there will be a review of that.
Yep. All right, Bill, closet door is back open. Time to go back in now.
You say I'm in the closet?
As soon as I said that, I was like, oh, man, that's not good. That's not right. I didn't mean it that way.
My life would be so much simpler.
Does your wife listen to the podcast?
No, not always, no.
What you got going on, Bill, for real?
Well, I got to work tonight, and
that's right.
We're off about 6. I'm going to put my top water rod in the car, and so
try a 5-hour energy for the first time.
Yeah, I am going to probably have to do some 5-hour energy tonight, and then when I go off work, go bass fishing where everybody's awake, and then come home and crash, and then I'll be off for the weekend. So, not sure yet what I'm going to do.
Have you binge watched The Last Jedi since it's come out in video?
It was going so well, Dave. No, I still hate that movie. I hate it even worse now. I don't like the director. I don't know. You don't want me to get started.
But didn't you like accost some kid at Disney World or something?
No. I was at the Hollywood Studios for Disney, and the stormtrooper came up to me, and I can't remember what he said to me. And he goes, "You look like trouble," or something. I said, "The Force." Not The Force Awakens. I said The Last Jedi was a terrible movie. He just gave me this blank, pitiful stormtrooper stare. And he's like, that wasn't our training, you know?
Are all their stares blank?
Yeah. But I'm just saying, you had to be there.
All right. Remember, you can find Bill on Twitter at RealBSykes. That's S-I-K-E-S. Follow him on Twitter for all his Gator interaction there and on the Swamp 24/7 boards. Thanks to Thomas Goldcamp and Blake and those guys for joining us recently as well. We'll get them back on soon. You can join Will on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and find his articles at readandreaction.com. I'm your host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. So thanks for Bill for joining us back in. Will and I, we've missed you, Bill.
Yeah, I need one of those hats, Dave. You need to hook that up.
yes. Details soon.
Okay. Yeah, it's always good to be on, man, and hopefully we'll be back on soon. So.
Absolutely. So, all right, for ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls out there, thanks for listening to Gators Breakdown.